Radio Prague News.
A court in Johannesburg has ruled that Radovan Krejčíř may be arrested again. The International Union of Architects says that the tender for a new national library building in Prague was fair. 58% of Czechs support the death penalty, suggests a new poll. A court in Johannesburg has ruled that fugitive Czech businessman Radovan Krejčíř may be arrested again, provided that the Czech Republic supplies all the required documents. The prosecutor, acting on behalf of the Czech Republic, says all materials are already in South Africa and wants to have Mr. Krejčíř arrested immediately. Businessman Radovan Krejčíř, whose whereabouts are unknown at the moment, was arrested in South Africa in April but was later released because the Czech authorities did not file the extradition documents in time. However, both Czech Justice Ministry and South African prosecution claim the period had not expired. Mr. Krejčíř can move freely in South Africa, but may not leave the country. In the Czech Republic, he is wanted for a number of economic as well as violent crimes. The International Union of Architects says that the tender for a new national library building in Prague was fair. In an unofficial response to the inquiry by 8 Czech architecture studios dissatisfied with the results of the contest, the union confirmed the position of the international jury that chose the projects by Czech-born London-based architect Jan Kaplický. The results of the tender were published in March and immediately provoked criticism based both on technical and aesthetical objections. The new National Library should be finished by 2010 at the Prague's Letná Plain and will cost about 2 billion Czech crowns. 58% of Czechs support the death penalty, suggests a poll carried out by the CVVM agency in May. Most supporters of the death penalty say that it is an adequate and just punishment for grave crimes. The death penalty in former Czechoslovakia was abolished in 1990. Until then, about 1,200 people had been executed since the end of the Second World War. The number of people supporting capital punishment has been decreasing since 1992, when 76% of the population were in favour, while in 2000 it was 60%. Monday marks the beginning of tax freedom in the Czech Republic, and Czechs are no longer working for the state, says the think tank Liberal Institute, referring to estimates by the OECD. The Tax Freedom Day symbolically ends the period of 164 days, during which all income was paid to the authorities. This year, the day came 3 days earlier than last year. The day of the Tax Freedom Day varies in different countries, depending on tax duty. The Czech Justice Ministry is in debt and cannot pay the companies it had commissioned, says Hospodářské noviny. The Daily reported that one of the companies even sold its claims of nearly 60 million Czech crowns to a foreign bank. The ministry started renovating court buildings and constructing a new justice palace in Brno during the term of the former minister Pavel Němec. It commissioned more renovation work than the ministry could afford, said the Daily. And finally, a look at the weather. It is expected to be mostly sunny intervals over the next few days, with occasional showers and storms. The temperatures should reach up to 31 degrees Celsius. My name is Jan Richter, and that was the news.
Hello, this is Radio Prague with Ian Willoughby. Welcome to the program. Today, the Jiří Čunek case faces a serious setback after a prosecutor is removed. The opposition cries foul. Another high-profile Czech criminal evades justice, and we'll have the news from the world of sport. Then, later in the program, a Canadian human rights campaigner turns the spotlight on China. Please stay tuned for that and more. Regular listeners will be very familiar with the name Jiří Čunek. Mr. Čunek, who's Deputy Prime Minister, has been under investigation for some time on charges of bribe-taking. But his case took a strange and surprising turn on Friday, when the prosecutor in charge of the case was removed. That will set the whole thing back some time, and could even result in Jiří Čunek never coming to trial. The Supreme State Prosecutor, Renata Vesecka, strongly denies that she came under political pressure to interfere in the case. She says the prosecutor in question made a procedural mistake. The opposition, however, is crying foul. Dita Asiedu reports.
For the ruling coalition government of the Civic Democrats, Christian Democrats and Greens, charges of corruption against one of its deputies have been a thorn in its side. With a weak 100 seats in the 200-seat lower house, the coalition faces tough negotiations if it hopes to push its public finance reform plan through to another reading. With criminal proceedings against Mr. Chunek slowed down, it can now concentrate on the demanding task ahead. The opposition, meanwhile, is crying foul. Social Democrat leader Yiti Parobek says the dismissal of the state prosecutor was clearly politically motivated, and Ms. Vesetska broke a number of laws by giving in to pressure. According to Mr. Parobek, there's been long-standing pressure exerted from the government on all levels of the state prosecution. Ms. Vesetska's predecessor, Maria Benešová, has a similar view. If anyone was next in line to interfere in Mr. Chunek's case, it would have been the Supreme State Prosecution in the Olomouc district, where the case is being investigated. Since Ms. Vesetska has overstepped her authority, it is a valid reason for her to be removed from her post. Mrs. Vesetska seems to have forgotten that there are structured levels of authority that are strictly hierarchical, says Mrs. Benešová. The decision to dismiss the state prosecutor, according to Ms. Vesetska, was not taken by herself, but rather by the state prosecutor's office. She hopes to appear before parliament to explain why that decision was made. Such allegations, in my opinion, border on an attack against a state organ, which is a criminal act, the Supreme State Prosecutor said on Sunday, adding that she has sent an email request to the chairman of the Committee for Constitutional Law to allow her to speak before the lower house. Yiti Chunek, who is also the leader of the Christian Democrats, is currently one of the most controversial figures on the Czech political scene. Opinion polls suggest that his popularity has fallen dramatically since the beginning of this year. Mr. Chunek's wife, a dentist by profession, remains optimistic. For Mrs. Chunková, the situation is unpleasant for her, but mainly for her children. She says she has always believed that the truth will prevail and will continue believing in that. The charges of corruption were brought against Yiti Chunek shortly after he entered national politics last year, though he's being investigated for accepting a bribe 5 years ago when he was still mayor of the town of Setín. Police recently said that several witnesses who testified in Mr. Chunek's favor had not told the truth. Mr. Chunek, who's been insisting that someone is conspiring against him, has welcomed the dismissal of the state prosecutor.
Radovan Krejčírš last week disappeared in South Africa after being released from custody. Now another controversial Czech businessman seems to be giving the Czech justice system the runaround. Tomáš Pitr had been due to begin a 5-year prison term for fraud at Prague's Pankrác prison, but he never turned up. There are fears that he, like Radovan Krejčírš before him, may have given the Czech authorities the slip. Jan Wellinger has the details.
More cynical observers probably weren't all that surprised when last week convicted Czech businessman Tomáš Pitr failed to show up at Prague's Pankrác prison. He was meant to begin serving 5 years for tax fraud, but he did nothing of the sort. Pitr, one of the Czech Republic's richest businessmen, has successfully avoided jail since last autumn, when he first cited poor health as a reason. Last week, he did something similar, sending authorities a last-minute fax saying he was again sick and had undergone hospitalization. That apparently was the last straw for Judge Petr Novák overseeing the case, who said he felt deceived, having been given a promise earlier through Mr. Pitr's lawyer that the businessman would begin his sentence. The judge compared Mr. Bitter's cited poor health to little more than suffering from headaches and dehydration. Even more questionable was the fact that Tomasz Bitter's document lacked verifiable information, even a name of the facility where he was supposedly being treated. As a result, the court issued a domestic arrest warrant followed by European and international warrants 2 days later. The latter were preventive measures in the event that Mr. Bitter, like a number of infamous Czech businessmen before him, tried to escape abroad. At the weekend, the country's justice minister, Jiří Pospíšil, told public broadcaster Czech TV he did not think the judge had made a mistake in the case. He did say there were problems with the system.
A day after Mr. Bitter failed to show up, the judge issued a warrant for his arrest, and according to our supervisory department, let me stress that I had the whole matter looked into, the judge didn't make a mistake. It's now up to the police to find Mr. Bitter. I have to say that unfortunately felons not showing up to begin their sentences is a problem in the Czech justice system. We have 5,000 such cases in the country. That's the reason why I put forward an amendment in Parliament that would make avoiding prison a crime and would make convicts lose their chance for earlier release through parole. That's the solution we've put forward.
The Justice Minister admitted on Sunday that he had received no information as yet regarding Tomasz Bitter's possible whereabouts, but he also indicated there was nothing that suggested the businessman had already fled abroad. Where and when Tomasz Bitter now resurfaces is the million-dollar question. Authorities will be hoping when he does, it will be in Czech custody.
If you've just joined us, thank you very much for doing so. You're listening to Radio Prague, where it's now time for all the news from the world of sport. We begin today with football, and the Czech Republic's youngsters are currently in the Netherlands, preparing for their first game at the European Under-21 Championships. However, on the very eve of their opening game against a Premiership star-studded England, the Czech lineup wasn't clear. Coach Ladislav Škorpil said he was having trouble picking a starting 11, given that several of the Czech Under-21s had recently had health problems.
The problem is that some of the players were out for a while. It's a question of finding those players who are now able to produce high-quality performances. It is not simple. That's why we play friendly games, but when some players haven't appeared in them, then you have to go on how they do in training.
The Czech Republic's opening game against England takes place, unfortunately, after the recording of this programme, but we will be bringing you the news, the team's results, in our news. The Levičata, or Lion Cubs, as the Czech under-21s are called, will be without injured captain Martin Latka for the tournament in Holland. Fingers crossed, though, they can emulate their predecessors of 5 years ago. In 2002, a team including present full internationals Milan Baroš, David Rozehnal and Zdeněk Grigora won the tournament, after a dramatic penalty shootout in which Petr Cech was the hero, saving two. Motorsport now, and the Czech motorcyclist Lukáš Pešek has been making life difficult for himself in the 125cc World Championships. After leading the competition, he's fallen off the pace after falling off his bike in the last two races. Pešek's latest tumble came in Barcelona on Sunday when he caused a crash 4 laps from the finishing line. The Czech rider, who blamed a brake failure for Sunday's setback, eventually managed to finish 13th and is now third in the overall standings. It's a funny old world, eh? Czech pole vaulter Adam Potáček set a new meeting record last week when he cleared 582 centimetres in the Pražská tyčka, or Prague pole, which takes place every year in an unusual venue, the bottom of Wenceslas Square. But shortly after setting the record, Potáček took a bad fall while trying to outdo that height by another 4 centimetres. The athlete did considerable injury to his arm, and though it isn't broken, it does seriously threaten his chances of taking part in the World Athletics Championships in Osaka. 582 centimetres is 1 centimetre higher than Potacek's own Czech record. However, it doesn't enter the record books, as the Prague pole is an exhibition event. Finally, getting back to football for a moment, and it's not so unusual for fans to get married at sports stadiums, but it's certainly out of the ordinary for a professional footballer to get married on the turf at his home ground. But that's just what Czech international Marek Matějovský did last week, when he and his partner Simona tied the knot on the pitch at Mladá Boleslav. That's all the sport for today.
Every year, Radio Prague holds a competition for listeners where the main prize is a visit to the Czech Republic for two. If you'd like to take part, then please note the following information. This year, the competition question is, which Czech film do you remember most fondly and why? The person who sends the best answer, which will be chosen by a specially appointed jury, will win a week-long stay for two people in the Czech Republic with flight tickets from a European destination. There will also be valuable prizes and souvenir items for other entrants. We will broadcast the best answers and publish them on our webpage at www.radio.cz at the end of June. Answers should be sent no later than June 15th of this year to the following address: Radio Prague, Vinohradská 12, 12099 Prague 2. You will also find that address on Radio Prague's webpage, or you can send your entry via email to cr@radio.cz. The winner will be provided with a week's accommodation at the CMC Hotel near Prague. Travel to the Czech Republic will be arranged by Sky Europe, the Central European airline. Do take part if you have strong memories of a Czech film. We look forward to your answers.
Now, in the last part of our program today, we meet a Canadian human rights activist who's keeping a close eye on China in this edition of One on One. Where do the organs come from for all the transplants in China? The allegation of organ harvesting from Falun Gong practitioners provides an answer. That's a quote from a report from Canadian human rights activist David Kilgore. Mr. Kilgore, a former Member of Parliament, who also served as Canada's Secretary of State for the Asia-Pacific region, was recently in Prague, lobbying for support in the fight against illegal organ harvesting in China. Andrea Fajkusova, our colleague from Radio Prague's Spanish section, met up with him during his visit. She first asked David Kilgore what he thought of the Olympic Watch Group. It was established in Prague in 2001 with the aim of monitoring the human rights situation in China in the run-up to the 2008 Olympic Games.
I can congratulate you on having an Olympic watch. I refer to it a lot, and I try to get... There's sort of an informal network now that we're trying to partner with groups like the Darfur. So I'm hoping we can form bridges with other groups like the Darfur community or the Burma community or the number of groups that are concerned about what's going on. There was an article in the paper I saw on Google that I'm sure you could find it, saying that human rights are getting worse in China as we get closer to the Olympics, and asking, well, the government of China said that it would improve human rights if it got the games, but instead they're getting worse. They're locking up more people. They're doing this to Falun Gong. And what kind of a Olympic movement would sanction this kind of behavior? We're pushing... Frankly, we've almost given up on the International Olympic Committee. We think they're completely spineless about this matter, but we're pushing the National Olympic Committees in the 70 countries where they exist to push this issue as the National Olympic Committees, I can certainly say I urge the government of this democratic country to continue to encourage other governments of perhaps countries that have not been through what the totalitarian system you went through to take a stronger stand on this.
Commercial interests play an important role.
But if, for example, X corporation sponsors an event at the Olympics and they suddenly find that people are boycotting their products, a beer company or a car manufacturer, or won't buy, I'm not, for example, I would not buy a product from any company that sponsors an event at these Olympics. I don't know how many people agree with me on that, but there may be a lot. Now, whether it's over Falun Gong treatment, persecution, or whether it's over Darfur, or whether it's over the terrible things that the government of China is doing in Burma, or in Zimbabwe, or in North Korea, if enough of us see X corporation sponsoring an event and we say, that's it, I'm never going to buy another product from that company, I find they'll move pretty quickly.
The 1st of May, a new law came into force in China concerning organ transplants. What will this law change?
I hope it changes everything, but the trouble is the doctors, the military, the hospitals are making hundreds of millions of dollars by selling organs. So does anyone think that this new law is going to be enforced? So many laws in China are not enforced, and they're simply passed for public relations reasons. There's no doubt the army brags about getting a lot of financing of profits from organ harvesting on one of their websites. I'd be very surprised if the law means anything. This is a quote from their website. This is the Organ Transplant Center of the Armed Forces General Hospital in Beijing. The website says the Organ Transport Center is our main department for making money. Its gross income in 2003 was 16 million won. That's, I guess, about $3 million. And so they go on to brag about how they're making money. So the short answer to your question is that I think this was announced because of the Olympic Games, and I would be very surprised if the practice stopped. We'll know if it stops because we have good information. We'll know whether this practice stops, and I doubt very much if this law is going to make much difference.
And who are the clients of this organ market?
Yeah, that's a really tough question. David Matus, my co-author, went to a country in Asia. I better not name it. But they told him that about 5,000 people a year go to China for organs from one country. These are obviously wealthy people who can pay the prices. In Canada, for example, we've made inquiries with our medical people, and we've discovered that about from three hospitals alone in Canada, one in Vancouver, one in Calgary, one in Toronto, about 100 people from Canada have gone for organs over the last few years. It's rising, too. They tend to come from countries like Japan and Korea and Taiwan, but there's no doubt people are coming from the U.S. and Canada, and I can't tell you whether I've never heard anybody say that somebody from the Czech Republic was there.
Can we find out if some product is made or was made in a labor camp in
China?
Yes,
that's a question that we've been asked actually here in the Czech Republic, and Ming and I are going to attempt to come up with a list of products. What happens is that, I gather, I've looked into this, is that X company, Y company, asks a subcontractor in China to get them, say, promotional products for Christmas. Then the subcontractor goes to the work camp, and they get the products, and they come along as a subcontractor, and the company in the West doesn't know, it says, that where these products come from. But that's why we've got to get a list, as you've just said, of these products, so that hopefully this will stop happening. But China has been producing these products for a long time, in these forced labor camps. I can give you an anecdote of a company called Dynasty Wine. And a couple of years ago, I was at a friend's place for dinner, and somebody from the Chinese embassy brought a bottle of Dynasty Wine. Well, allegedly, this is a product that's made with forced labor in these labor camps. So in the West, when are we going to wake up and realize that the kinds of things that you heard from Ming are going on in these camps?
The last question is about Cuba.
I was... I was not allowed to go to Cuba when I was Secretary of State for Latin America because their human rights were so bad that our government decided that we would not let anybody go to representing the government of Canada. Your guess is as good as mine as to when Mr. Castro will die, but a lot of people in my own country, it's a lot, go there for vacations, and I don't think they see any of this side of Cuba. I know that the governments of the Czech Republic have shown a lot of courage and a lot of leadership in fighting for human rights in Cuba, and I think you should be, your governments should be congratulated for standing up for human rights there. The point about human rights, as you know, is that you've got to stand up for human rights wherever they're being abused, whether it's in Guantanamo Bay or whether it's in Cuba or wherever it is, because otherwise you're just seen as doing it for political reasons. So whether it's, you know, it's on the left, the government's on the left or the right or the center, wherever human rights are being abused, people have to stand up for them. And I'm sure that this is the view of the people of the Czech Republic.
David Kilgore was interviewed by Andrea Fajkusova of Radio Prague's Spanish section in that edition of One on One. It takes us to the end of today's program here on Radio Prague. From myself, Ian Willoughby, thanks for listening. Goodbye and take care.